Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans, not just from here in Calgary, Alberta, but around the world. If you're hearing my name, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start this episode off with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. First of all, a little disclaimer before we get started. This is the last race before the official summer break. So I'm going to be saving some of the topics that happened this weekend in the past race and a little bit of the off-track, we'll call it extravaganza and drama for our next episode. I will be doing the first half review of the 2024 season. So that being said, let's get right into it. Alpine team principal Bruno Famin has officially been fired. A little awkwardly, though, he's not leaving the team until the end of August. Imagine giving your boss that much notice. Be like, hey, you know what? I'm going to quit, but I'm going to give you a month's notice. I'm going to hang around. Things are going to be awkward. I'm still going to try to do my best. Or even your boss going, hey, you know what? In a month, I'm going to let you go. Hey, heads up. Find your things, you know, get your shit packed, get your desk all organized, and then you'll be out of here. I can't see this as being a fantastic option for both Alpine and for Bruno. It's going to make things ridiculously awkward. I know they're all professionals, but realistically, how much effort is he going to put into this team? He doesn't have a seat backed up for him yet. Like, he doesn't have a position in any other team. There is no plans for him to go to IndyCar, NASCAR. He's just taking a gardening break as far as we know. There's no plans for Bruno Famin at all. Period. So how is this going to affect the team? How is this actually going to help them? That being said, they fired him before the break. The break is about 3.5 weeks long, almost a month, which the next race will bring them to the end of August anyway. So he has this race plus one more and then you're done. Man, if it was me and I had 3 weeks off before I have to go back to work for 1 week and then I get fired, I wouldn't probably exactly have the best mindset. I wouldn't exactly take things too seriously. And how much help would I actually be? Some people are probably better than I am at that. Rumors are flying and rumors are abound that this potentially could be the last weekend for Checo Perez in the Red Bull seat. It doesn't come as a surprise that these rumors, and this is coming from inside Red Bull as well, this doesn't surprise me at all that this could be the last weekend for him in Red Bull, at least in a starting seat. He hasn't exactly been lighting up the track and bringing in the points like Max Verstappen has. Yes, we all know that Checo Perez is not as good a driver as Max. The car seems to be different somehow for Max as it does for Checo. But it's a team sport. And if your team is not cohesive, something's got to change. It's not always the coach, or in this case, the head principal. Sometimes it's actually the players. Sometimes they arise to the occasion and sometimes they stumble a little bit longer than others. So what are they going to do? What options does Red Bull have? They've got Yuki Tsunoda. They've got Daniel Ricciardo are the very first names that pop to mind. Who are you going to choose between those two? Yeah, VCAR isn't exactly supposed to be the sister team of Red Bull, but at the same time, it's the most convenient options and the options that make the most sense. Yuki Tsunoda, he's been trying his best. Lately, he's been outraced, outqualified, and outpoint by Daniel Ricciardo. He would be a fresh face in Red Bull. He could bring a different perspective. At the same time, would you go with somebody new or would you go with somebody who has, last time they were in a Red Bull, a very successful stint? Daniel Ricciardo has been there before. He knows the pressure driving for Red Bull, driving with and against Max. He knows the in and outs to a certain extent. He hasn't been there for a few years. And he would be the most cohesive option. He knows the in and outs, like I've said. And as well, he, as of right now, when it's counted, he's got the better performance than Yuki Tsunoda does. The only thing is the price tag, how long he would be there for, if this would actually be a good move for him, or is this just a, hey, Checo, if you don't succeed, these are the people that will replace you sooner rather than later. So pay attention, get your shit together, and then we'll move on from there. Would this actually be the last race for Checo? I think if they are going to dump him, even though they did sign a 2-year contract with him, an extension, that they would get rid of him near the end of the 2024 season, like the end of the season, if he hasn't done enough. then it's time for him to go. But as of right now, he's kind of hobbling along. He is helping the team. I mean, Red Bull right now has 399 points coming into this weekend. I mean, they should be upwards of, if you compare to last year, 500 and some odd points. They are drastically down their point count as they were compared to last year. So he really needs to pick it up and essentially pull his head out of his ass. Sticking with Red Bull, coming into this weekend, Max is taking on a new power unit. He's taking a 10 place grid penalty. So that means if he finishes first, he actually starts 11th. He finishes second, he comes 12th, you know, so on and so forth, all the way down. This, I mean, he's taken his last power unit a couple races ago. Now he's over his allocation now. We still have a second half of the season to go. I do expect to see Max Verstappen take this penalty at least one more time, just for how hard he is on the cars, just for how fast he drives, just the development of the car itself, and just because it's Formula One and just because these cars are 20 million plus each, it is a mechanical, you know, contraption. It is going to fail. They are going to have parts. So I expect, like I said, at least one, if not two more power unit replacements for the end of the season. But it's Max. He can start from the back of the grid, as we've all seen, and still finish a race in first. Am I really concerned about it? Should they be concerned about it? Probably not. This weekend, Yuki Tsunoda as well, he takes a 60 place grid penalty for the amount of parts in his power unit that he has taken for his replacements. Now, he's starting at the back of the grid anyways. He didn't exactly have a fantastic qualifying session, or no matter what he does in qualifying, he's still going to start at the back. But 60 places, like, I appreciate the math. I appreciate them saying, hey, this is how many grid spots you fell back. But they even told him, like, hey, if this was any other time, if you were first, you'd be dead last because you took 60 places worth of parts for a grid penalty. It's a little amusing. He didn't seem too enthusiastic about it, but no matter where Yuki Tsunoda finishes in qualifying, he will be last in the starting grid. Now, like I had mentioned before, there has been a few things that have popped up since the race came out, since the beginning of the race, so on and so forth, and since this recording, but we are going to cover these next weekend because that is a whole other topic. Some drivers found their spots. Some teams have found replacements. It's very, very exciting, what we'll call mid-season, off-season. Silly season seems to be off to a good start, but it doesn't seem as silly as it used to be because all of these rumors are actually true. But until then, let's get into qualifying. Q1. Lots of rain. We're in Spa. It has a tendency to rain either a little bit or like, oh my God, torrential downpour. This is a little bit of a drizzle. Now, this is very, very important for all of qualifying. It generally stays the same weather from Q1 to Q3. Now, what this does is it puts these drivers in a very peculiar gray area when it comes to track temp, track grip, and what tires they want to use. When you put in three absolutely 100% unknowns that they have absolutely no control about, you see some slower than usual lap times, which is definitely what we saw. Even the top guys were struggling to get around the track. It was not shocking, but it was very humbling for some of the top guys because generally they're blowing away everybody. They have to slow down just so they don't wear out their cars. In this case, because of the temperature, because of the track, and because of the grip, people like Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton, Checo Perez, you know, Lando Norris, the entire McLaren team, even some of the Audi guys or Audi Aston Martin guys, they really had to concentrate and slow down just because it was a little slick and a little slimy on qualifying. No big drama, no disqualifications, no impediments, all that kind of fun stuff. Q1, let's get to the bottom five. From 16th to 20th, Nico Hülkenberg in 16th, Kevin Magnussen in 17th, Yuki Tsunoda in 18th, Logan Sargeant in 19th, Zhou Guan Yu in 20th. Logan Sargeant last weekend before, better qualifying, a little bit stronger, but again, he just doesn't have the experience. I do believe that his time is 100% almost up in Williams. He's trying, he's really, really trying, but at the same time, how long can you wait for someone to actually understand it opposed to, hey, you're actually gone? Moving right into Q2, a lot faster. The track had dried out just a little bit, still a little bit drizzle for rain. But because you've got 20 cars going around and around and around, they made the racing line, so therefore they are going a little bit faster. From 1st to 14th, this shows how much improvement these guys had. From 1st to 14th, they were 1 second difference. So if you're the very last guy, okay, 1 second in F1, it's quite a bit. But as you start moving up, these guys are so close, the cars are so tuned in, the weather was where it needed to be, it was absolutely 100% amazing. fantastic to watch. Again, no drama. These guys learned what they needed to do. Let's just get into Q2. From 11th to 15th, Alex Albon was 11th. Pierre Gasly was 12th. Daniel Ricciardo, 13th. Valtteri Bottas was 14th. And Lance Stroll in 15th. Side note, Aston Martin, all of a sudden, what they were doing wrong is starting to auto-correct itself before the halfway mark of the season. Lance Stroll, a lot more consistent. I still don't like him as a driver. I still think he's an absolutely useless seat, but in a seat, I think Aston Martin could find someone totally better than him, but he is becoming a lot more consistent over the last few races, if not the first quarter of the season. It bodes well for Aston Martin. They need the points in the Constructors' Championships. Fernando Alonso needs a lot of help. He needs someone to actually step up and help him out with the point count. Will it help Aston Martin and the Constructors by the end of the season? Probably not. They are in a pretty tight pack. Everyone seems to be super consistent with their points. But hey, when both drivers are getting points, when both drivers are being consistent, it helps the team all around. Daniel Ricciardo qualifying 13th definitely out-qualifies Yuki Tsunoda. As of late, like I had mentioned earlier, Daniel Ricciardo's finding his groove. Him and the car are acting as one. They're very too much together. It's very harmonious. It bodes well for the second half of the season. Daniel Ricciardo still does not have a seat for the 2025 season. The better he does in the second half of the season, the more likely he is to have a seat for 2025. It may not be a starting seat, but at least he'll be associated with a Formula One team. He'll be that backup driver for, who knows, maybe Checo Perez. Maybe he takes over somewhere, you know, Williams, or maybe, you know, any other Alpine, maybe Haas. They're all in turmoil. They're still looking for a second driver. So you never know where Daniel Ricciardo will end up. But the faster and better he is, the more points he accumulates, the more likely of a chance he has for the 2025 season. Moving straight into Q3, it's the big boys' time. Light rain. Checo Perez actually decided to show up. He was very, very consistent throughout first Q, second Q. I don't want to say that I think he's realized how much danger he is to losing his seat. We have seen this pattern before with him. He does a slump, and then all of a sudden the worst it gets for him potentially is losing his seat. Then all of a sudden he gets really, really better. And then all of a sudden he slumps again, and he gets really, really good. It's just that back and forth, that back and forth. His consistency is not having consistency, unfortunately. But today is one of those consistent qualifying days. He really, really showed up. Second to only Max, if we're being honest. He did really well. Okay, not second to Max, but he was obviously second to Max in qualifying because Max, it kind of put myself into this. Max does end up winning Q1. Max topped Q1, Q2, and Q3. As I fuck my way through this description. But Checo showed up. He has looked super consistent in his car, looked super strong. Car looked like it was on rails. Car looked really light, even in the inconsistent weather. It was great. It's finally see if Perez can show up for qualifying and for the racing. Max Verstappen, like I said, ended up getting pole, ends up being 0.6 seconds ahead of the second closest competitor. He is set to be, you know, that car looks ridiculously fast, but we're in Spa. Spa doesn't exactly have a whole lot. There isn't a whole lot of places to pass. There is a couple of places where you can push someone further off the line, makes it a little bit dicier, and one really good straightaway. Max, as I said before, has a 10 place grid penalty, so actually he'll start 11th. Will there be enough time for him to actually get up where he needs to be, get the points to keep Red Bull and himself ahead in the drivers and the Constructors' Championship? So let's go through the top 10 before the grid place penalty was in place. Max Verstappen ends up on pole in Q1, Leclerc in 2, Perez in 3, Hamilton in 4th, Lando Norris in 5th, Oscar Piastri in 6th, George Russell's in 7th, Carlos Sainz is in 8th, Fernando Alonso's in 9th, Esteban Ocon is in 10th. So, with the 10-place grid penalty, all of a sudden, Max Verstappen is bumped all the way down to P11 just because he did end up winning qualifying. So that essentially bumps everybody up one. Alex Albon ends up in the top 10. He is in, you know, he's in a good spot for the start of the race. Top 10 is nowhere to sneeze at. Obviously, it's not your top 5 and it's not the front row. But how Alex Albon has been driving in that Williams lately, he's picking up points no matter where he is. It may be a tougher, longer day for him, but he's still going to pick up points. He's got that enthusiasm. He's got that presence now. He's really, really, really feeling the car. For him, unfortunately, in my opinion, it's midseason break. They're breaking that momentum. He's losing that momentum that he has to a certain extent. They're not allowed to do any kind of training or development in the offseason or in the midseason break. You are supposed to, by contract, by definition, by FIA rule, Formula One rule, all that kind of jazz, you are supposed to relax for the next 3 weeks. There is no training, no sim work. Max, we're talking to you. No work on any car unless it's your own personal car at all, period. You have to take a break. Hopefully this break doesn't ruin Alex Albon's pace that he's got, the confidence that he's gaining in this Williams car. Hopefully Williams will come back in the second half of the season even stronger than they were before. Now, it's not to say that they've been failing compared to everybody else, but Williams always seems to be in that spot where no matter how much they develop, everybody else is also developing at the exact same time. I really hope Williams can pick this up. I really hope Williams can find a driver to go with Alex Albon for next season that is not Logan Sargeant. Logan Sargeant needs to leave. He can't get out of Q1 more often than not. He's not attributing to any points whatsoever. Top 10 Mercedes. Like I said, Mercedes will be in third and sixth with the penalties. Mercedes seems to be coming into their own. They had absolutely, I mean, by the driver's own affirmation, they had an absolute shit practice. They were not on the ball. They were not consistent. They were not fast. They felt really sluggish, hard to control the car. In this case, it looks like they've figured something out. Q1 and Q2, both of them were still top 10. And now obviously Q3, they're top 10 again. Almost both of them top 5. This bodes really, really well for Mercedes, their confidence, and the development for their car. But it's only qualifying. What will this transfer into an actual race where you can get rain, you can get sunshine, you can get a thunderstorm in Spa? But only time will tell. Let's get right into it. It is race day. It is Spa. We are talking 19 turns, 44 laps, 7 kilometers per lap. It is the longest track on the F1 grid. Top speed of 359.4 kilometers an hour. Fastest lap of 146. Valtteri Bottas, 2018. Will that track time be challenged today? A little bit extra coming out of Q, qualifying into the race. Joe Guan Yu picking up a grid place penalty for impeding Max Verstappen. I looked back when I heard that this has happened. It wasn't really impeding, in my opinion. Yes, Max caught up to him at a very inopportune spot for Joe Guan Yu on the track. He didn't really have anywhere to go. At the same time, he wasn't really in the way, in my opinion, as well. Obviously, the Red Bull and the stewards thought differently of this. It's unfortunate for Joe. It doesn't really make a difference. The kick salvo cars this season are not exactly in the hunt for points at all, period. They don't have any points in the Constructors' Championship. So it's just a little bit more frustrating that they just added to Joe's day. On top of that, very, very, very clean start. But 4 laps later, all of a sudden, Joe Guan Yu really, really slow. Apparently, there was electrical issues. Joe had to restart the car. Essentially, a rolling start, restart, turns the engine off, puts it into neutral, able to get enough traction, get the car around the lap get the car around the track a couple more times, ends up being a DNF, lap 7, just a bad weekend for Kick, a bad weekend for Joe in general. Nothing he could have done about it, a 100% mechanical issue for him. I mean, before that, right off the bat, Hamilton jumps a spot, leapfrogs Checo Perez. The starts that Hamilton and Mercedes in general have been having have been better than McLaren, have been better than Red Bull. They're just not putting themselves in that position except for today. Lewis Hamilton absolutely destroying Checo Perez on the beginning, on the start, on the out lap. Checo trying to keep up, trying to keep up. By the time we hit lap 9, he's in third. He stays in third, but he's not able to keep up with Hamilton or Leclerc. Is this the car? Is this the driver? Is it a combination of both? Was there a technical issue that we did not know about? Listening to the radio throughout the race between Checo and his team, there was no mechanical falter. There was no mechanical difficulties, anything like that. It just seems to be no matter how hard Checo tries, he cannot keep up with the drivers that he needs to. With him starting in second place when the race began and him dropping to third, the expectation from Red Bull and the strategy and himself and all the pundits and everybody around him, the expectation is you have to finish in the top three. You're in a fantastic position. Okay, you lost a spot to Hamilton. Mercedes seems to be on a streak right now. You should be able to hold off the people that are behind you for third place. It shouldn't be that hard in a Red Bull car that you have. Can you not hold off Norris, Piastri, Russell, Carlos Sainz? You technically have a car that is better than everybody else. Yes, they are catching up, especially McLaren. They've got a rocket ship for a car, but you should be able to hold them off with your driving experience, taking advantage of the track conditions, and taking advantage of the strategy that Red Bull has put together. You know Red Bull's going to come back with a proper strategy that they're not going to fuck up this time when it comes to a race like this. They cannot afford many more mistakes in the second half of this season and the second half of next season just because everyone's catching up to them so fast. What does not help is when you're racing in Spa, it's a gigantic DRS train. And by that, if you don't know what a DRS system is, it's the drag reduction system. That's where the flap of the back of your car goes down and you gain about 15 to 20 kilometers an hour when you are within 1 second of the car ahead of you. Because the cars are so elevated and so sophisticated, everybody's within that 1 second. So if I get DRS, the person behind me gets DRS, the person behind them gets DRS, and everybody gets it at the exact same time, which means everyone's going fast, which is great, but that also means that no one's able to move up or down as easily as they want. They can't pass when they want, and it's a little bit of a slower development for the race itself. Now, you're wondering, well, what's the strategy for Spa if you can't pass that much and if it's 7 kilometers a lap? Well, it's coming down to the pit stop. It's another strategy-driven type race, especially when the weather's not into play. Red Bull strategy, it's going to be smooth. It's going to be long-lasting. They're not going to do the early pit stops. Ideally, you want to do one pit stop if your tires can manage it. Okay, it's only 44 laps. It doesn't seem that long because it's not. But when you're moving at that speed, with that kind of downforce, and you've got 7 kilometers per track, that's really, really hard on your tires. If you do this correctly, you're not running softs. 100%, you are not running softs. You might run softs on the last lap if you want to get that extra point for fastest lap, but long term, you're either going medium to hard or hard to medium. You want to stretch these tires out physically as long as possible. So you don't want to do as many pit stops because when you do, it's a grand total of 22.4 seconds per pit stop from the time you come in to the time you leave. You are losing massive spots and you can't pass willy-nilly like you want to. You have to wait for other people to pit. So Red Bull strategy, take your time. Everybody else's strategy, on the other hand, do an early pit stop, cause an undercut, and then pit one more time when everyone else has fresher tires, because then you're going to have even fresher tires later on down the road. So what does that mean? You have to be able to be a driver that can squeak the life out of your tires like there is no tomorrow. Some guys can absolutely do this. Lewis Hamilton, George Russell, Fernando Alonso, Max Verstappen when the car is in the right spot. People who cannot do this, people like Lance Stroll, people like Oscar Piastri, who is still learning, I'll give him that. So he's still learning how to give the tire life back. Checo Perez cannot do this. He's not good at it. And slowly but surely, as you see people pit, as you see Checo race, you slowly see him go further and further down. It's just, man, you started in third. Okay, you're expected to potentially drop out of the top 10 when you do your first pit stop because, again, so hard to pass. It stops for so long and you just kind of got to wait your way in. And then eventually you make your way back up to, you know, top 10, top 5, top 3, where you should expect to finish. Like I said, Checo is expected to finish in the top 10, top 5. He's expected to finish in the top 3. This is absolutely 100% not happening. It's not that the strategy was wrong. It's not that the tires got away from him. He's just, I don't know what happened to him. It was just, he looked slow all of a sudden. It's just no matter how hard he tried, he's not keeping up. He's slower. He's slowing down even more. And it's just like, God damn it, man. Like, what are you doing? Like, this is not boding well for your F1 career. Now, Was it frustrating? Absolutely. Is he still going to end up collecting points for Red Bull? Yeah, absolutely. I expect him to. I don't expect him to drop that far out of the rankings. Definitely not out of the top 10. It's just super frustrating to see him start so high and he finishes in the top 10, but much, much, much lower than you expect him to. A team that has really good tire strategy is Mercedes. George Russell, he's getting better at his tire strategy. He's getting better at extending the life of the tires, and this shows why. This example shows why. It's a 44-lap race, okay? George Russell does one pit stop, lap 10. That is his only pit stop. He now has to take his hard tires 34 laps at top speed while defending the likes of Hamilton, Piastri, Leclerc. Max is starting to creep up there too. Does George Russell have enough experience? Does he have enough tire life? Does he have enough aerodynamic genius in his car to make these tires last as long as he does? There's only one way to find out. You watch him. And they watched him pretty much the entire race. And you could see him go, and he starts to slow down just a little bit more. He does, and spoiler alert, we're just going to hop to it at the very end. He does end up squeaking out the win ahead of Lewis Hamilton, and it was by like a half a second. He made the tire, not only did he make the tires last, he learned the strategy of where to lift. And by lift, I mean not put the pedal to the metal the whole time during the race. He's lifting, not quite coasting, but he's taking the pressure off, the G-force off the tires. And he's gaining spots and gaining time on Lewis Hamilton in the more complicated areas. So when it comes to the straight stretch, yeah, Hamilton's faster. He's got DRS. He's within a second of him. He's within a half a second of Russell. But the further you get into the race, the further you get into the track, it's more complicated. Russell picks up that time again. Really, really, really good strategy from him this time. The race was not given to him. He legitimately won this race. Congratulations, George Russell. His strategy, his timing, it worked together. It was fantastic. Second place, Lewis Hamilton. It was a Mercedes type of day. The drivers were ecstatic. Toto Wolff was ecstatic. And no one really knew where it came from. And I watched the practice. I watched the qualifying, watched the race, obviously. I don't know where they picked up all of this extra downforce, frontline speed, and tire saving aerodynamics. Like, the degradation was next to nothing for Lewis Hamilton. Everything just came together. I don't want to say last minute, but it came together when it really, really needed to. This is the perfect way for Mercedes to end the first half of the season. They're on a roll now. Constructors' Championships, they're still within the top five. They are almost within striking distance of Ferrari. Like, they're gaining points where they need to at a very opportunistic time. Now, they don't get all points. They got first and second. They don't get fastest lap, which just would have been the crown jewel on their weekend. But congratulations to Mercedes. Really solid weekend, kind of out of nowhere, which was great to see. Oscar Piastri, late pass, lap 36 on Charles Leclerc. Piastri, again, really, really coming into his own, understanding the car. Tire dig for him wasn't nearly as bad as it normally is. He's learning to prolong the life of the tires. Great tire selection. Great strategy. Another really solid weekend from McLaren. They're definitely catching up. They are definitely, definitely catching up to Red Bull now. They're 43 points behind them at the end of this race. Second half of the season is going to be ridiculously close for everybody. It was also nice to see that when it was Mercedes 1 and 2 with about 10 laps left in the race, that Mercedes let them race. It wasn't team orders, Russell's going to win. It's not team orders, let Lewis Hamilton pass. They just let them go back and forth. They let them try to catch each other. That's what teamwork is all about. The only reason why I bring this up is because of the McLaren example last race, where they made Lando Norris give Oscar Piastri his first win. This is a note of what McLaren should have done. Follow Mercedes' order. Hey, you guys are racing. You're still teammates, but race healthily. You know, we're going to win. Give each other lots of room, but if you got room to pass, pass it. If you got room to defend, defend. This is what a team should be. When you see races like this, it's not very often, and I always state, you know, fastest lap. In this case, it was a 146.2 by Valtteri Bottas in 2018. It's not very often that fastest lap time records get broken. It's quite exciting when it actually is broken. Checo Perez actually did something, you know, constructive today. He sets the new fastest lap at 144.7 for the 2024 Spa. So he does get a point for the fastest lap. Kind of a slight nod to what overall is a not very successful weekend for him. He does finish in the top 10. He does get a final point, which just does help the team. Red Bull does grow their lead in the Constructors' Championship only by 2 points, one from Checo's fastest lap and probably where he finished. It's not looking really good. It's not a good end to the first half of the season for Red Bull. They need to go back when the second half starts up again. They need to reevaluate where the car is at, where they need to improve, what they need to change. Maybe it's time for some strategies to change. Maybe it's time for some, you know, some employees to change. I mean, just it's the end of the Adrian Newey era. And I think it's about the right time for Adrian to leave because it looks like this car is not going to be able to keep up for the rest of the 2024 season. But let's get into the top 10 at the end of the race. In first place, George Russell. Second, Lewis Hamilton. Third, Oscar Piastri. Leclerc is in fourth. Max is in fifth. Lando Norris is in sixth. Carlos Sainz in seventh. Checo Perez ends up in eighth. He starts in second, ends up in eighth, five-place grid spot. Those were massive points that he and Red Bull both needed. Fernando Alonso is in ninth, and Esteban Ocon, a delightful surprise, finishes in the top 10. Congratulations to Esteban Ocon. Let's get into the Drivers' Championships with these points. Max Verstappen stays in first with 275 points. Lando Norris is in second with 197. Leclerc is in third with 179. Oscar Piastri officially jumps Carlos Sainz into fourth for 164 points. Carlos Sainz is in fifth with 160 points. Lewis Hamilton is in sixth with 143. George Russell jumps to seventh with 141 points. Checo Perez drops to eighth in the Constructors with 129 points. Fernando Alonso is in ninth with 49 points. And Lance Stroll rounds out the top 10 with 24 points. Constructors' Championships, Red Bull is still ahead with 404 points. McLaren's in second with 361 points. Ferrari's in third with 340 points. Mercedes is in fourth with 284 points. Aston Martin's in fifth with 71. V-Carb's in sixth with 33 points. Right on the tail is Haas in seventh with 27 points. Alpine is in eighth with 10 points. Williams is in ninth with 4 points. And good old-fashioned Kicksalba is in 10th with absolutely 0 points. Maybe they will get a point in the second half of the season. I am not holding my breath. Story of the race, obviously the Mercedes comeback. They were absolutely garbage in first qualifying, second qualifying, third qualifying. They did make it obviously into the top 10. It was a really, really good stint, but nobody knew where that time came from. No one could figure out really where the improvement came from. But the reason why McLaren is the story of the race is just their sheer tenacity. And when Hamilton and Russell found out that they were faster and they could actually compete, they took that opportunity. They took it to McLaren, they took it to Red Bull, and this bodes very, very well for them for the second half of the season. Also, a very developing story after the race. Everybody gets weighed. The top three get weighed in Parc Fermé. Everybody, you see them on camera. They stand on this little scale. They get their weight because with the driver and the car, they have to stick within a certain weight limit. The car itself also has to be within a weight limit without the driver. Everybody gets weighed. This is how it goes. This is absolutely 100% normal. Unfortunately, and this is, I mean, I don't care who it is. It is absolutely heartbreaking. It hurts so much to say something like this, is that George Russell has officially been, this is really going to hurt to say, has been officially disqualified from the Spa 2024 Grand Prix because between the weight of the car and him, they were 1.4 kilos under the weight limit. Now, normally that's a good thing, but it was 1.4 kilos out of the regulation allowance, which means an automatic disqualification. Russell is out. Hamilton gets first. Piastri gets third. Leclerc gets... Hamilton gets first. Piastri gets second. Leclerc gets third. Max gets fourth. Everybody moves up a spot, which also means the driver championships also change as well. Everybody generally goes up a couple points. Max gains two, Norris gains two, Leclerc gains two, so on and so forth. until you get to Carlos Sainz. He gains 7 points, still in fourth. So he jumps a spot, obviously. Hamilton, what, Piastri's in fourth. Now Carlos Sainz is in fifth. Hamilton still in sixth. He gains 7 points as well. Then it's Perez in seventh with 131 points. Then it's George Russell in eighth with 116 points. So they do just kind of switch spots back. It is so, so, so unfortunate when something like this happens. At the same time, though, there are rules and regulations for a reason. I'm so glad the FIA actually decided to, what do you call it, enforce this. No response from Hamilton, no response from George Russell. It's all team response going, we stand by the steward's decision, we support George, congratulations to Matt or to Hamilton, blah, 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 all that kind of fun stuff that they should say. The Constructors' Championship points also change. Everybody gains about 4 to 5 points as well. Red Bull still first, then McLaren, then Ferrari, Mercedes, Aston Martin, Honda. Like, nothing changes when it comes to that kind of standings. It's just a couple points here and there on both sides. Either you win some or you lose some. And in this case for Mercedes, they lost quite a bit. So an unfortunate development when it comes to Spa, but I mean, it was still a good strategy from Russell. They figure the reason for this is because when you run your tires that long, you don't end up, you know, like you end up losing so much rubber that that's where the difference was made. He made one stop. If he did two stops, he would have been fine. He probably wouldn't have won the race, but he wouldn't have been hit with a penalty for disqualification for being underweight, just because when he ran that long, he lost so much extra rubber from the tires. And when he won, it's a very, like, even when you're slow down lap, it's kind of a way to cheat. You go into the marbles, you pick up rubber, so you're still within that weight limit. He didn't do that. He just stayed on the racetrack, on the racing line, went in, congratulations. Then he just gets disqualified. So unfortunately for Russell and unfortunately for Mercedes, loss of points, no loss of standings in the Constructors' Championships. They switch back with Perez and Russell for the Drivers' Championships. That just sucks. I hate it when he didn't cheat. He didn't cheat. If people think he did cheat, it wasn't intentional. It's just how sport goes. So Russell, keep your head up. You've got a really good, really, really good race, really good race pace. Second half of the season, you will be 100% dominant. And that, folks, is the wrap-up of the Spa Grand Prix, the Belgian Grand Prix. And now we are officially at mid-season break. Well, how long is the mid-season break? I'm about to tell you. Next race is in the Netherlands, and that is not until a very long time from now. That is not till August 23rd is the next race weekend. It is a normal weekend, except for us in Canada. If we want to watch qualifying and pre-qualifying and the race itself, it's going to be a little bit of an early weekend. Especially if you want to watch the pre-qualifying show like I do, that's 6 a.m. on Saturday. Qualifying is at 7. Then the pre-race show is at 6 a.m. on the Sunday, which is the 25th. And then the race itself is at 7 a.m. So what can you expect from me from F101 in the off-season? Well, I'm going to bring you guys a breakdown of all the teams for the first half of the 2024 season, which ones I think are absolute winners, which one I think are absolute losers, and where I think each team will be headed by the end of the 2024 season, with my predictions on who will win the Drivers' Championships as well as the Constructors' Championships. And as always, I would love to send out a massive thank you to everybody who tunes into F101. Thank you for making this dream, this hobby of mine, successful. One day I would love to turn this into my actual full-time job. And as always, drive safe, and I'll see you guys next time on the track.